Welcome, friends. We've got a special treat today in studio. Jay Siegert of the Starting Point Project. That's next.
Welcome to Worldview Matters, discussing controversial issues, discerning current events, defending biblical Christianity. No topic off limits. And now, here's your host, David Fiorazzo.
So friends, our fundraiser is over. We're good to go for the next 6 months. And I just want to thank you. I mean, it's mind-blowing, actually. That's what we're going to talk about today. Mind-blowing insights from Psalm 104 and the God of creation. But I want to shout out to some states. I mentioned all your names when you give a donation. But we've heard from Virginia, Michigan, Wisconsin, Ontario, Canada, BC, British Columbia, Canada, North Carolina, Ohio, Texas, Illinois, South Carolina. Did I say Michigan already? I think I did. New Mexico, California, Tennessee, North Carolina, Wyoming, South Dakota, and Minnesota. If your state is missing, get a hold of us at worldviewmatters.tv. So today's guest, Jay Siegert, The Starting Point Project. Jay, I love this topic today. But first of all, friends can go to thestartingpointproject.com. And we want to look at Psalm 104. But before we do that, and there are some mind-blowing insights and truths about the God that we know and trust. But we're pre-recording. So we recorded this if it's airing today. We recorded this last week. You're speaking at a conference. That's why you're in town. So in Green Bay, tell us about it. And it's a youth conference?
Yeah, it's called District's Youth Conference. Yep. This will be my 14th year.
Gosh.
They get just over 4,000 youth and leaders. So it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
I really look forward to it. I just actually do breakout sessions, but my breakout sessions will have up to 1,000, you know, youth in it, which is very exciting. So it'll be Friday night through a Sunday. Really looking forward to it. I love ministering to the kids and to the youth leaders as well, helping train them with a biblical worldview.
14 years.
Yeah.
Wow. With youth.
With
anyway,
youth.
Good. So I'm sure that went well, now that we can say that, because it just took place last week. So knowing God through creation, I shouted out to you before we decided what we're going to do today. You put some amazing notes together here, and I love Psalm 104. Every time I go through the Bible and I go through the Psalms and I read some of these things. For example, and we'll get into detail, Lord willing, if we have time, on some of these. Like verse 5, God established the earth upon its foundations so that it will not totter forever and ever. Fascinating to look into. And then verse 9, for example, God set a boundary that the waters cannot pass over so that they will not return to cover the earth. There's just some amazing things. You go, wow, that is our big God. So where do you want to start? How do we know God exists?
Sure. It's a simple question.
Just wrap it up in 30 seconds or less.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. I remember I used to do computer programming, and I envisioned someone walking down the hallway saying, hey, I'm on my way to a meeting. I only got like 5 seconds, but can you teach me how to do computer programming right now? Like, okay, 5 seconds? Probably not. But on the other hand, asking this question, how do we know that God exists? For a Christian, there are two basic questions that if I was an atheist, I'd be running around asking every Christian, how do you know God exists and how do you know the Bible is the Word of God? Basic questions makes a lot of sense, but way too many Christians are not in a good position to address that, and they fumble around with it as if they hadn't thought of it before. That doesn't look good for us when we're asked a basic question like that. So you asking me this question, I'll answer it relatively briefly. We could do a series of shows on this, but here would be a brief response. The first one, I think, is the most powerful, but it's the least impressive to a skeptic. But I got to start there. God is a spirit being. He's not a physical being like us. He's a spirit being, and we are created in the image of God. Well, if God's not a physical being and he created us in his image, we are spiritual beings as well. He did give us a physical body. Mm-hmm. But it says in Romans 8:16 that God's spirit confirms with our spirit, the one he gave us, that we are the sons of God. So what's going on here? This is powerful. God, who's all-powerful and is a spirit being, has created us with physical bodies but instilled in us a spirit. And his spirit is communicating with that spirit he put inside us, the knowledge that he exists. He actually put it there So it's not something I have to work to and like I've thought through it and I'm pretty confident God exists. Yeah. No, I have absolute knowledge, not because of my intelligence, but because God has placed that knowledge within me. That's how he created us. He communicates with us that way. Now, I don't expect a skeptic to be impressed by that I think I have the Spirit of God.
Right.
But this is a truth of Scripture, and ultimately it's how I know for sure God exists. Now, there's another aspect that the skeptic would relate to more, and that comes from Romans chapter 1. When you read through the second half, it talks about that God has put so much evidence for his existence.
The E word, evidence.
He has put evidence in just in his creation, so much so that mankind is without excuse, meaning no one is ever going to be able to stand before God and say, well, I would have believed in you, but you didn't give me enough evidence. He's going to say, no, I gave you plenty of evidence, but they chose to reject it. And the remainder of the chapter goes on to explain consequences for rejecting this evidence. And so God creates the skeptic and gives them all the evidence and gives them the ability to accept it or reject it. If they reject it, consequences of a reprobate mind, darkened thinking.
God gave them over, right?
To a reprobate mind, Romans 1:22, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. It's not name-calling by God. He's not saying, oh, they're just a bunch of fools. He's describing their thinking process. So they don't process the information properly. Yeah. They got knowledge in their head, but they're lacking wisdom. So we can get into a little bit of the evidence that goes along with what God's talking about.
And do we see that today? Even like I think of college professors and the most intelligent professing to be wise, right? The fool said in his heart, there is no God.
Right. The evidence is so powerful, but it's not necessarily persuasive because it's a heart issue. So some of the things that I convey in some of my lectures are so straightforward. I say, you have to be highly educated to not get this.
that's a good way to put it.
And that's not a slam against the secular scientists. We're dealing with the spiritual issue. But here's an example, as basic as you can get. The origin of this universe, it's big and it's here. So whatever worldview you hold, you need to have an answer. Where did the universe come from? We have three options. One is that it was created by something. Another one would be that it was created by nothing. The third one is that it's just always existed. So it wasn't created by anything. It's always been here. Really quick approach to that. Many scientists used to believe what was eternal. The universe is eternal. You don't need a creator. It's always been here. Well, they ruled that out years ago. It can't be eternal. It would have run out of gas a long time ago if it had been around. So they realized the universe had a beginning. So that leaves two options. It was created by nothing or it was created by something. Well, can you really have a serious conversation about nothing creating everything? The way they try to do that is they redefine nothing. Lawrence Krauss, one of the world's leading theoretical physicists, said, they asked, you know, how do you get a whole universe out of nothing? He said, when people think of nothing, they typically think of the absence of anything. It's like, I'm with him on that right there.
Yeah.
But he said, that's a philosophical definition of nothing. He said, I don't care what philosophers think. He goes, I care about the nothing of reality. And if the nothing of reality is filled with stuff, I'll go with that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
If the nothing of reality is filled with stuff.
So he just says nothing is actually something and that something could create the universe. That makes no sense. Why don't we let nothing be nothing and reserve the word something for stuff, which you have to explain where it came from. So you can't, as soon as you say nothing, there's nothing to talk about. There are no properties of nothing. It can't do anything. It doesn't exist in time or space. Space and time don't exist. So it doesn't make sense to say nothing created everything. It must have been something. With the something, that something was either some physical stuff or non-physical. Well, it can't be physical stuff because then you'd ask, where did that physical stuff come from?
Yeah.
It couldn't have been around forever. It would have to be a non-physical entity that's outside of the creation itself, which
outside
is what God claims to be. So the whole argument of where did the universe come from? It must have come from something, it couldn't have been a physical thing. Otherwise, you'd have to explain that. So that's very brief. We could go on and on. One other simple analogy. Once in a while, I talk to grade school kids, and I think, okay, I got to really tone it down. But it's turned out that many of the analogies I use for them work really well with adults.
So even I'm going to be able to understand what you're going to say.
That's right. So picture yourself walking through the woods, and on the ground you see a hammer. Would you think that probably what happened was a long time ago a branch broke off a tree and then rotted into the handle and then minerals leaked out of some rocks and formed the head on the end of that stick? No. you would know right away somebody made the hammer and they or someone else left it in the woods. It's a no-brainer. Now, there aren't many things simpler than a hammer, but you could see design that doesn't happen by accident.
Yeah.
You walk further in the woods, you see a cell phone. Okay. Do you think that happened by accident in minerals? Well, obviously not. If something as simple as a hammer had a creator, obviously something as complex as a cell phone also must have been designed. No-brainer. No one argues with that. Fast forward, our own bodies. Human beings blow away any cell phone out there.
Yeah.
If we could recognize the necessity of design and creation in a hammer and in a cell phone, what stops you from saying it makes sense that we were designed as well, unless there's a heart issue going on where you don't want that to be the answer? But it's so straightforward, and we won't get into the details of DNA on this particular show, but it's just, it's logical, it's mm-hmm. rational. The only reason you'd want to deny it is if your heart says, I don't like the consequences of that, because then I might be responsible to this creator.
Well, you mentioned the human body, and it makes me think of all the millions of doctors, and it's surprising to me, they've studied the human body more than anybody, that they haven't said, well, my there's got to be a God, a creator of this intricate, amazingly designed thing, this system, the human body, the human being, right?
Yeah, and many of them do come to that conclusion. What they do with it, we could talk about that at another time, but some have come to that conclusion. Others still deny it. So if they're looking at the same information and coming up with two totally different conclusions, the important part isn't in the facts that they're looking at. It's in their worldview, their starting point. What are they using to interpret those facts? Otherwise, all scientists would agree the same thing pretty much all the time, looking at the same facts. The fact that they come up with different conclusions says it's not about those facts. It's a heart issue that deals with the worldview and starting points.
That's right. Jay, let's go back to the beginning of Psalm 104. And Psalm 103, of course, everyone knows as, "Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me. Bless his holy name." Psalm 104 starts out, "Bless the Lord, O my soul." And then it says, "O Lord, my God, you are very great." So we're about to talk about some amazing and, I think, insightful facts and truths about this great God, thanks to Jay Siegert. "Covering yourself with light." Actually, I missed one. "You are clothed with splendor and majesty, covering yourself with light as with a cloak, stretching out heaven like a tent curtain," and it goes on. You want to just mention those, or you want to just jump to something else?
We'll start with that. Again, we're not going to be going, obviously, word for word through the whole thing. It would take a long time. So what we're going to be doing is just pulling out different things that give us just a glimmer of who this God is, that not only created everything, but that we get to worship and spend eternity with him as Christians. It says he stretched out the heavens like a garment. I don't know if I ever told you before, I'm actually the world's leading expert in Hebrew. If I didn't tell you that, that's probably because it's not true. I'm probably the leading on the bottom. But it's interesting when you look at the original languages. And it says that God stretched out the heavens. And if you want to know what that means, it means that God stretched out the heavens. Now, what does that physically mean? We honestly don't know. We have some really good ideas. There's not enough in this context to tell us. But seven times the Old Testament says God stretched out the heavens. So it does relate to some things that it might be referring to. It could very well be that when God created the universe, he stretched out the heavens and it got bigger. What we're seeing today, it does seem like there's evidence that the universe is expanding. We don't know that for sure, but there's enough evidence that it's probably happening, and it could be a result of the heavens having been stretched out, or that they are still moving because they were stretched and it's still going. What's interesting is not only does it seem like the universe is expanding, it's expanding faster and faster, which makes no sense to a secular scientist, because you'd have to have energy to move that along. So that's where they get into this dark energy. They just make up something that can maybe make it go faster and faster. There's no evidence for it, but they need it.
Okay, Jay, we've got to take a brief pause here. When we come back, verses 5 through 9 are, to me, some of the most amazing scriptures in that Psalm 104. And we're going to jump around a little bit. We're with Jay Siegert, the Starting Point Project. We'll be right back on Worldview Matters.
Introducing Patriot Mobile, the wireless carrier that stands with you. We are committed to supporting the values that make our nation great. With affordable plans and reliable nationwide coverage, Patriot Mobile is not just a wireless service. It's a call to action for those who believe in the American dream.
Get free activation now with promo code David. If you're listening to our show via audio podcast, you can help us out by please leaving a five-star review on either Apple or Spotify to help the show rise in the rankings. You can also subscribe to our new, and I can say brand new, YouTube channel, Worldview Matters, David Fiorazzo, no spaces, and we'll see what happens on YouTube. All right, Jay Seeger, so verse 5 in Psalm 104 says, God established the earth upon its foundations so that it will not totter forever and ever. We can just briefly get your thoughts on that, and then I know you wanted to cover 6 through 9.
Sure. Well, God created the universe to operate in a certain way. It's called the cosmos, which means order. God is a God of order. He's not a God of confusion. So he set the universe to operate under laws that we have discovered. And so it's not that God has to miraculously cause everything to happen. He created everything. He set up laws that data on a day-to-day basis, like when I put water in the freezer and then it becomes solid later, I don't think Jesus snuck into my freezer and performed a miracle. It's operating under the laws that we know and
laws
boils,
of nature,
gas laws.
Nature's God.
Yeah. So our solar system operates a certain way, and we might have time to get into some of the orbit of the Earth around suns. Really cool. But he did establish it. It is under a curse. It's not going to be that way forever. It talks about that the earth won't be moved. That doesn't mean it doesn't move at all. But there are other passages that talk about heavens and earth will be destroyed. So how do you have it not moved if it's going to be destroyed? What's going on there with the Greek and the Hebrew is when God destroys the heavens and the earth and recreates them, it's not an obliteration of the actual materials. It's a reconstitution of those materials into new heavens and new earth of new form, but not obliterating it altogether. So it's going to be on forever, but it's going to change its form.
Yeah. Well, what about the waters were standing above the mountains in verse 6?
Cool reference. The beginning of this chapter is talking about God and his creation. There's a shift there in 6 through 9, talking about actually the flood, at the end of the flood, and portions of the flood. We know that when the flood judgment came 1,656 years after the creation of Adam, that the earth was covered with water. All the high hills under the whole heaven were covered. So we know it was a global flood, all the high hills covered. And what's interesting, okay, if you picture the earth totally covered with water, a lot of people wonder, like, so where did it go? How does it go anywhere if it's covering the whole earth?
Right.
Well, God answers some of that here in Psalm 104. He caused the mountains to rise up. So there were mountains, but not as high as like Mount Everest, 5.5 miles high. The mountains that did exist that were covered with water.
So some of them were submerged, you're saying?
Yeah, all of them.
Yeah?
Because the whole earth was covered with water, okay. All the high hills under the whole heaven. We have marine fossils, sea creatures fossilized on top of Mount Everest, 5.5 miles high, because it was lower in the past, covered with seawater and sediments, laying the sediments down. And God is saying here in Psalm 104, God, at the end of the flood, caused the mountains that did exist to rise even higher and the valleys or trenches to sink deeper. And we know that the ocean basins have sunk a mile down. And God says, I'm doing that for a reason. I'm setting a boundary so that the waters of this earth will never be able to come back and do this again because the mountains will be too high and the valleys of these trenches too deep. So there's the same amount of water on the planet today, but the ocean bottoms are too low, the mountains are too high. If you smoothed everything out like a cue ball today, there's enough water just in the oceans to cover the earth 1.7 miles deep. That's just ocean water. We have now discovered there's probably three times that much water in the layers of the earth. Plenty of water around, but now God changed the geology of the earth. It's physically impossible for the waters to return and cover everything because of God doing this in Psalm 104.
That is fascinating. And I also think about the at the beach, you know, the water won't take up, you know, come and, you know, take
so
over
far.
The sand and the beach and then go in and wipe out towns. It just, you know, the tide keeps going out. It will only come so far. It's the boundary that God set. Go ahead, Jay. Where do you want to take us?
Well, let's for fun, let's go back to verse 19. Talks about the moon marking the seasons and the sun knows it's time for setting. Just so much cool going on with God's creation. The Jewish calendar was a lunar calendar, so they measured their months by the moon, which is 29 and a half days. But just for fun with our solar system here, you can do this as a mental exercise. pretend I just gave you a blank piece of paper, turn it 8.5 by 11, turn it sideways. On the left side, at the very edge, put a little dot. That's going to be the Earth.
Okay.
Then an inch away, you put another dot, and that's the Sun.
Okay.
So you got a paper, two dots on the left, right. Inch away, Earth and Sun. That's 93 million miles. That's the distance from the Earth to the Moon. Okay. Now if you put another dot on your paper that represents the distance not from the Earth to the Sun, but from the Earth to the next closest star, which is Alpha Centauri, where would you put the dot? Knowing every inch you go further is another 93 million miles. Some people say, oh, probably in the middle of the page. Some people say, no, I bet it's off the edge. Try getting in your car and driving 4.25 miles and putting a dot. And every inch of that 4.25 miles is another 93 million miles. That's just to Alpha Centauri, the next closest star. Now you put one more dot down. Not the distance from the Earth to the Sun or Earth to the next closest star, but from the Earth to the center of our own Milky Way galaxy. Our solar system is in one of the arms, spiral arms of the Milky Way galaxy. So from us to the center of our galaxy, you'd have to drive 25,745 miles. And every inch of that distance is another 93 million miles just to the center of our own galaxy. And there are probably 2 trillion galaxies out there.
That is mind-blowing. I mean, it's that is hard to wrap our heads around.
Yeah.
How big and how massive
it is. And that's just a glimpse. I always jokingly say I think God had to use every bit of his might to hold himself back and only make it this big. To him, it's nothing.
It's a different perspective, right?
Here's another fascinating thing makes your head spin. So the Earth orbits around the Sun once a year. As it does that, it's not a circle, it's an ellipse, but let's just say it's a circle. If you're going to make a circle, you can't just go straight. You have to curve in to make a circle. For every 18 miles the Earth goes straight, it cuts over a ninth of an inch. So imagine walking 18 miles and then cutting over a ninth of an inch and then going another 18 miles, cutting over a ninth of an inch. That would be a huge circle. So that's the circle that the Earth does around the Sun. But that's not even the interesting part. If the Earth, when it went 18 miles, if it didn't cut over a ninth of an inch, if it only went over a tenth of an inch, we'd freeze to death. We'd be too far from the Sun. If it went 18 miles and didn't cut over a ninth of an inch, cut over a whole eighth of an inch, we'd burn up. We'd be too hot. We are orbiting in this Goldilocks zone right where God designed it. It's not an accident. It's a design feature, and it just goes on and on from there.
Wow. Okay, so where are we here? I'm looking at going back to 19, he made the moon for the seasons. The sun knows the place of its setting. You appoint darkness and it becomes night. Then it goes on. What's another verse you want to point?
Let's jump to 32.
Okay.
It says, who looks on the earth and it trembles, it touches the mountains and they smoke. You know, the poetic language, you know, picturing God's finger and coming down and touching a mountain and it smokes a volcano. So it's not trying to be literal with God touching it.
Right.
It's God's power. And so I thought it might be fun to talk about different powers that we see on the earth that just fascinate us. The bigger something is, the more fascinating it is. And when you see something big move, it really catches your attention. So one of them has to do with the power of moving water. And I talk about a lot of this when I do our Grand Canyon tours, because the flood was a global event, so a lot of water. So what I typically talk to people about is incidences where there was a much, much smaller amount of water and did a lot of damage. And I say, if that small amount of water could do that damage, imagine what a global flood could do.
Hmm.
So just one example, Glen Canyon Dam, northern Arizona. You got Lake Powell, and then you got the dam creating Lake Powell. And then the Colorado River goes from there out and goes through the canyon into the Grand Canyon. Well, when you have a dam, you don't want water going over the top of the dam. It would do a lot of damage. And in 1983, there was a lot of snow melt in Colorado, and the water was coming down the Colorado River and into Lake Powell there, and it was starting to rise. And there was a lot of rainfall, too. For every inch of rain they get in that area, it equates to a 12-foot rise in the dam, in the lake there, because pools all that water, it goes into the lake.
Wow.
Well, in 1983, it was in danger of breaching the top of Glen Canyon Dam. You can't have that. They first started putting some plywood up, and it was still rising, and that wasn't going to do it. There are turbines at the bottom that they'll open up to let some water go out underneath so it doesn't go over the top. Those things release 17,000 cubic feet of water every second. It's a lot. So they opened them up. Wasn't enough. And there's a larger spillway on the side These things release 32,000 cubic feet of water every second. And it's designed, so it's a big tube designed to have water go around the dam into Colorado River so it doesn't go over the top. That's what it's designed to do. So they opened it up in 1983. Very shortly after, they felt the ground shaking. The water coming out of the spillway was discolored, and they saw chunks of stuff flying out. They had to shut it down. They went in there, and they found carved there was a gully that was 32 feet deep, 40 feet wide, and 180 feet long that was carved in just minutes through 3 foot thick rebar reinforced concrete and solid sandstone. It's called cavitation. When water flows over an uneven surface, it creates these little bubbles. The bubbles don't explode, they actually implode, and they cause a lot of damage.
Wow.
So a little bit of water flowing through a tube that was designed to have water flow through it caused all that damage in a very short period of time. Okay, now imagine a worldwide flood. What would that do?
And that's what you talk about, like you said, the Grand Canyon, because you think, oh, my goodness. Because they say, some people say it's billions of years or millions of years this happened. I think we just have to go back and just kind of reason, understand, and look at the evidence. There's that E word again.
Yeah.
Jay, we're almost out of time again. Is there something that you absolutely wanted to mention briefly that we didn't get to? Because Psalm 104, as the whole Bible, is just really amazing.
Yeah, it's hard with it, you know. 60 seconds that we have left or whatever.
Yeah.
I would just challenge people when they're looking at Scripture, ask, what is it that God's telling us about himself?
Mm.
Because this is God's word. One thing that we skipped over is, okay, we know there's evidence for God, but how do we know it's the God of the Bible? Super quick analogy. If you walked into a room and there's a cake there, you'd know right away someone made the cake. You can look at it all day long. You wouldn't know who made the cake. You look at those details, the layers and frosting, won't tell you. But if the creator of the cake left you a note, you could know. Look at the universe, all the evidence. There's no way this is an accident, but we wouldn't know who created it, why they created it, what they want from us, what happens to us when we die.
Yeah.
Unless the creator left us a note, and that's what the Bible claims to
his
be,
word.
A note from the creator.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of evidence for that.
His message to us. And I just think back what you mentioned earlier, Romans 1. Men are without excuse. Just look at creation, friends. There's so much evidence right there. And then I think of 1 Corinthians 15, if you want to get into the eyewitness testimony. And then I think of fulfilled prophecy. And then I think of archaeological digs and finds, which I'm sure you could speak to that as well. But I'm sure you'll have a great time at the conference. Thanks for, and when you're in town here, coming
sure.
in.
Well, I appreciate being on the program.
It's awesome. It's awesome. TheStartingPointProject.com. Make sure to look up Jay and follow him. And guys, we just thank you. Hopefully this encouraged you today. We have a big God, and these were some amazing insights. So thanks so much. God bless you. And as always, keep speaking the truth about things that matter.